Hi, my name is John Eskow. I'm the writer and a co-producer of Air America, and we're going to watch the movie together, and I'll tell you what I know about it. This C stands for Carol Co., which was the production company formed by Mario Casar and Andy Vanya, who got quite wealthy doing the Rambo movies, and in a way, Air America was the anti-Rambo of its time. Here we are, where the entire movie will take place, in Laos in 1969, and Dan Melnick, the ultimate producer of this movie, the uber producer, as it were, is an extraordinary character who deserves a tremendous amount of credit for the making of this movie, which was an insanely gigantic undertaking, and no sane man would have done it, but Dan stepped into the void. That's a C-147 vintage cargo plane. A lot of this stuff that seems so surreal is, of course, completely based on fact. Cargo planes did drop these enormous sacks Cargo planes did drop these enormous sacks of food onto Laotian villages and often did some damage with it, and dropping pigs. Here's another pig.
There are no American combat forces in Laos.
This opening sequence was devised by Bob Rafelson, who was the original director of the movie, and myself.
At the present time, we are concerned by the North Vietnamese move into Laos.
This guy is what's called a kicker in the trade. It's the most dangerous job you can possibly have in supply missions, because you quite literally are shoving or kicking cargo out of an open bay door in the back of the plane. Usually it's a job given to local people who are considered expendable, since they're indigenous people. I'm still struck every time I see it by the enormous logistical problems that were faced in making this movie. It was amazing. Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, is the wonderful artist who has done the Coen Brothers movies, among many others. This sequence was specifically suggested by Bob Rafelson, and I've got a real fondness for it. The single shot. Again, vintage C-147. Some of you may remember that Ronald Reagan at one point said that all the supplies we sent to Nicaragua could fit into one C-47. That's a lot of supplies. It's a very, very big plane. It's a huge plane.
In accordance with the 1962 accords, which were agreed to incidentally by...
I don't know who this guy is.
...and the Soviet Union, we have been providing logistical support and some training for the neutralist government in order to avoid Laos falling under communist domination.
Talk about culture conflict.
In Laos,
reality versus Washington speak is always the biggest cultural conflict of all. But. This movie was made under circumstances that could never be replicated today. This movie could not be made today. We had freedoms of a kind that just don't exist anymore, because Carol Co., and specifically Mario Casar and Andy Vanya, were so successful with the Rambo movies and other movies that they were, in essence, the studio, and what they wanted to do was just turn the picture over to Dan Melnick, who in turn turned it over to me and a couple other people and told us to do our best. The movie takes place in Laos. This is Long Tieng, an actual rendering of the actual CIA main base in Thailand, which was kept secret from America, as was the entire Laotian theater of that war.
Is he dead?
Well, Rob, if he's not dead, he's very, very calm.
This actor is who's walking after Mel is David Marshall Grant, extremely talented actor and very good playwright too.
Yeah, I saw Nixon on TV.
Yeah, so if we're not actually here, then of course this didn't happen.
Well, maybe it didn't happen for you, and maybe it didn't happen for Nixon, but I think it happened for Doug.
So David. David was essentially given the role of embodying in one person embodying the CIA point of view.
Damn it, Major, these pilots are such
headcases. This actor is Ken Jenkins, a wonderful actor, the absolute opposite of what he looks like, and he was modeled on a combination of characters including Oliver North, Richard Secord, and other lovable people like that. Robert. What can you say about Robert Downey Jr.? Wonderful guy. Absolutely brilliant. Perhaps a little too sensitive to live in this world, but a wonderful, wonderful person. The music supervisors for the movie, Becky Mancuso and Tim Sexton, were kind enough to let me pick out a few of the tunes. I picked this tune by the Seas because I thought it represented Billy Covington, Robert's character, quite well. I like this scene.
Well, I gotta say, I think music speaks for me, Stevie. All I want is just a be free. Live my life the way I want a be.
Writing for Robert is like writing for Miles Davis. He's going to play the tune as you wrote it and add his own very special tone to it.
Yeah, you got that right. You know why?
That's why we go to you, Bill.
Yeah, I guess so.
This was an insanely expensive scene to film, as you can imagine, since an actual freeway near Los Angeles was shut down for an entire day or two. Didn't write that line, but I am proud of Fuck You, Eye in the Sky.
All right, well, this is Rock 1080, and where else are you going to get that kind of in-depth look at the L.A. traffic situation?
He's a hell of an actor. Robert, at this point, was really struggling in his personal life. He was very sober throughout the entire time, and that was quite a challenge for a lot of other people, considering we shot almost all the movie in the so-called Golden Triangle, which is where a tremendous amount of the world's opium is grown, and pretty hefty amounts of marijuana as well. Robert never touched anything the entire time we were there, and we would have kind of one-on-one AA meetings in his room. I loved him. I always will. He's a good man.
Nothing lower than a grounded pilot. Who are you?
Let me ask you a question. Why did you fly down so low into that accident site?
Because there was an ambulance trying to get to the scene of an accident. All
right. He did have some problems with his role that we kept working on throughout the movie.
Fire it off the radio and get you high.
It's the kind of a role in a movie that's typically tough to bring off. He's got to serve a function as well as be a character. Hopefully he's got to be an interesting character into himself, but he also is going to be the means by which we learn about this very complex and confusing world we're going to go into, this surreal through the looking glass universe. So we've got to see reality in essence through his eyes, and there were times when he didn't want to be the eyes of the movie, and I can understand that. So we work tremendously closely, all the actors work with me to refine their parts, and it was far and away the best collaborative experience I've ever had as a writer. We'd get together and role play the characters. This is Long King, the secret Air Force base that the CIA maintained in Laos as part of the war effort. But as the CIA guy said earlier, we're not there. Actual psychological operations tactic used by the CIA.
That's nice, Rob. What's that supposed to be?
That is the sound of the torment of war. You see, when the enemy hears those sounds coming from your planes, they're going to be crazed. The North Vietnamese, they're pouring into Laos. They're heading into Saigon on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and they're hooking up with their little commie buddies. So, we blast them with this stuff, they panic.
Ned Eisenberg, wonderful New York actor. I love this guy. It's embarrassing, man.
I mean, they're going to point up at us and laugh at this shit.
Ryan, this tape was designed by experts for maximum psychological effect.
You got no idea who you're fighting here. As we record this, we're in the midst of the scandal involving the abuse of Iraqi prisoners. You got no idea. Nothing changes.
Rob Deal?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Billy Covington.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, you had some paperwork?
Yep.
I'd be considered probably on the spectrum of political beliefs pretty much to the left of center, but I respect anyone who does things well. My main problem with the CIA has been that they don't do what they do very well. And this is, if anything, a gentle depiction of how bad they were.
I'm from L.A., from the west coast of the United States, man. Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from the dark side of the moon.
That's Art LaFleur, who you may have seen in television commercials or programs. Again, a wonderful actor. All these guys could have carried a movie by themselves, each one of them. Together they formed a troupe that was incredible, both in real life and on the screen.
Pilot hijinks?
Yeah.
This is psychotic behavior, man.
Well, here at Air America, what's considered psychotic behavior anywhere else is just company policy. Gene Ryak.
Gene, how'd you feel about taking Billy on his orientation flight?
Sure, it's okay with me, if it's okay.
Mel and Robert formed a friendship that continues to this day, and Mel's been a real helpful presence for Robert in his life.
Well, then I guess as old Rob says, we're not here. Which means you're not actually seeing the second biggest city in Laos. Built from scratch, incidentally, by the U.S. government. And we don't really run 400 flights a day out of here, or ship 100 tons of cargo, medicine, weapons, platoons of local troops like
it's always a challenge to fit in the hardcore exposition that you need in a movie like this without having it seem like a chalk talk. As a writer, you're certainly lucky to have two actors like Mel and Robert to do it for you.
Today, peanut butter and mayo, salami, what do you got? Flight schedule. Better not be.
among people who know about airplane stunts, the ones in this movie are still considered to be state-of-the-art, even 15 years later. And, of course, we didn't have access to the CGI and other kinds of techniques that are available now. They had to be incredibly ingenious in how they worked this stuff out.
You don't seem to be having much trouble with her?
Yeah.
Well, I do all right up in the air. It's down on the ground that I...
The actor in back is named Tim Thomerson. He plays a kicker or a cargo handler. Again, just a very funny guy.
Fresno, Osborne, what a fucking hero you are. Flew traffic, Brian, in the sky? You flew a chopper?
Excuse me. Is that a newsie?
Hey, you know, that would make a great TV commercial, wouldn't it? Excuse me, is that a newsie? Well, yes, it is.
I can't believe this guy.
Self-defense is no laughing matter.
It says no warm line.
It's all rhythm. It's all about rhythm. Mel and Robert developed a good syncopated rhythm together.
The ashes of my left big toe. Got it shot off right through the floor of the cockpit. Not far from here,
you've been shot? You get shot here?
Yeah, me and Babo had to crash land.
They shot you here?
Yeah. Takes the tall home, cremates it, puts in that little jar around his neck.
Wait a second. No one told me anything about losing toes. I remember the whole conversation. You never mentioned toe loss. The recruiter, he never... Why did you get it sewn back on? They had doctors here.
Well, I could have.
That's my credo, you know.
To get shot off, I don't really want it back anymore. Besides, it's still with us in spirit.
Mel's ad-lib, toeism. See, get it?
Toeism.
He's got a million of them. Just get him started. God, the look of this movie, I haven't seen it for a while. It's it's beautiful.
United States Senator in my backyard.
So here's our CIA team, and the man about to emerge from the plane is named, the actor is named Lane Smith. He's also a fantastic actor who played Richard Nixon in a television movie. You may note a physical resemblance. The well-meaning Midwestern politician, sincere and just a little too stupid.
Welcome to VNTN, Senator.
Thank you, Ambassador Barlow.
Senator Davenport.
Lamond, Secord. Nah, it's a coincidence. Same number of letters.
Uniform, Major. Too hot for all those ribbons and braids, huh? You, going civvy on us?
Well, I am civilian now, sir. But I'm still Air Force parked.
Thank you very much. Footbag and big car.
Senator.
Oh, I know. Sorry, don't have local...
The highly insulted local general is played by Bert Kwok. Look closely at that face, and you may be able to guess what famous character he played 35 years ago. I'll give you a minute.
When you go to France, you have...
He played a... an assistant to a well-known movie character over a series of films.
Oh, thank you.
In that he's gone now, he was Cato, Peter Sellers' houseboy in the series of Pink Panther movies.
Landing? Where?
I guess I better show you.
Show me what? Landing where?
The plane that they're flying is called the Pilatus Porter, and it's one of the few planes in the world that's capable of landing uphill on a 50-degree angle if necessary.
Yeah.
in the woods. Guys! Hey!
No, I know them.
Who are they?
Well, as a matter of fact, they're friends of my wife. The little one's my brother-in-law with a business proposition.
Don't do that.
Gentlemen?
This is not a set. This is an actual village. The film was shot in... a lot of the film was shot in Chiang Mai in the north of Thailand, but this scene was shot in a very, very remote part of Thailand called Mae Hong Song near the Burmese border. And there wasn't much to do there. But it was... otherworldly. Mel's so effortless in these scenes. It's nice to watch him.
Brother-in-laws are the same all over the world, huh?
He's still got some of that old-time movie actor power that Humphrey Bogart and guys like that had. Gary Cooper. Perfect for the role. Absolutely perfect.
This is supposed to be my initiation flight. You use it to run some private scam.
Welcome to the Orient. This is not a scam, it's a retirement plan. I've been flying 15 years and I haven't got a pot to piss in, and I want my chunk of the American dream, okay?
Again, this business of each of the pilots having to have his own retirement scam, as Mel puts it, that came out of interviews with Air America pilots. They really did face death every day. It's the most dangerous job you could ever conceive of. And they weren't in line for any pensions, so they had to figure out how they were going to take care of their families after they, if by any chance they survived this madness into which they were thrust. The idea of using coloring books as a way to relieve tension, again, comes from the pilots themselves. One of my main advisors, whose name I probably shouldn't give right now, shared that with me. That was his way of dealing with high stress situations. But this casual attitude they have is really common among pilots who are faced with terribly dangerous missions. How else are you going to survive? Even their vocabulary defines their attitude. For example, if the pilots are shot and their planes are going down, they will describe it over the radio as being an interesting situation. This set is also, well, it wasn't a set really, it was an actual cafe that we transformed into a replica of an actual place in Vientiane, which is the capital of Laos. This was the hangout they all went to, called the White Rose Cafe, which was a combination restaurant, dance club, and whorehouse, of course.
No, son, they're not just drunk. They're drunk Americans. Hey, fellas! Hey, fellas! Pitching a little woo, are ya? Now, don't be embarrassed, fellas. I know I may look like an old stick in the mud, but back before I found the Lord, I partook of wine, women, and song on a number of concerts. But on a serious note, fellas, even though none of you will ever wear any shiny medals or be mentioned in the history books, there's a few of us back in Washington who know exactly what you're doing for the war effort.
One of the criticisms that was leveled at this movie, and it came in for criticism on a level that's almost impossible to describe. I'll get into it later, but it was savaged by the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and other papers like that, because we supposedly were dishonoring the memory of Air America pilots. I don't see that in the movie. And as someone who comes from a long line of military people who serve proudly, I categorically reject that we dishonored anyone. I think that, as one widow of an Air America pilot wrote to me, the people who dishonor them are the ones who deny what they did and deny their contribution. No TV?
No reporters, no TV.
That's what they did. They blocked it out. Again, nothing changes. If you can black it out, it doesn't happen. It didn't happen.
Can I ask you one thing?
Yeah, sure.
Is it like a kinky turn-on for you to bring your girlfriend to a whorehouse with you?
This is not just a whorehouse, friend. This is a place where men talk business.
Business? I was just getting used to this being a war.
Excuse me.
Who told you they were two different things?
That was another of the things I learned in researching the movie, how much of war is business. Quite literally.
Uh-huh. Something on your mind, Rob?
I was just wondering what the Pepsi-Cola...
This Pepsi-Cola factory, which is going to introduce one of the finer actors in the movie, again, taken from real life. There is John Eskow on the left, a remarkable actor, underused in today's Hollywood. I'm playing a what's described in the casting list as a French rockabilly heroin chemist. And this is a heroin lab. It was an honor for me to get to play a scene with Bert Kwok, even if my one line was cut.
I wish it was that easy, General. And in a civilized country like yours, it would be.
Look at how I stir that white powder. It's just, it's so believable, it's so real, and it's moving.
And cannot pay for war. If we don't sell heroin, no money to feed my soldiers. No, Major. Better you and me.
Again, the rationale that this character, who is based on an actual Laotian warlord named Vang Pao, who was enormously helpful to the CIA in Laos, the rationale that he gives is, in its own way, airtight. The prostitutes in this sequence, and we'll come back to this Longping cafe many times, are actual prostitutes. In Thailand, actresses will not play prostitutes because of national beliefs about honor and womanhood. So the casting director of the movie, who was a woman, had to go cruising the sleaziest streets of Bangkok in the Patpong area, looking for prostitutes who could act, at least to the extent of not staring at the camera and giggling. And of course, they all thought she was just trying to pick them up for other reasons. They understood the filming part, but they didn't understand the movie making part. If that difference is clear.
If I want to go out all night on my miniature golf course and shoot lizards, no reason to keep the neighbors away. You follow?
Wonderful set. The crew for this movie, at every step along the line, was just, I think, magnificent. The carpenters, the set builders, the true guts of any movie.
The man you ever met who built his own personal miniature golf course, huh?
Hey, I got a concept. What do you say you open this place up to the public and charge admission, Jack?
You guys can do that after I'm gone.
I'm leaving it to you all in my will.
Oh, no, save it, will you? No way, Jack's got a point here. I mean, come on, let's face it.
This actor's named David Bowe, and he's also probably a familiar face. He's done very, very well on television and commercials. Again, this guy looks familiar, but...
Never make a move.
I like the way that Mel really does blend into the ensemble. He made a point of it, and it's just one of many contributions that he made as an actor to this movie that went way beyond the star trip. I'll talk about them a little bit as they pop up. Roger Deakin, cinematographer. Fabulous sequence, the way he lit it, the way he shot it.
Professionalism.
How often do you guys go on a bender like this?
Bender?
No, this isn't a bender. This is just nighttime.
To pick up on the theme of Mel as the member of a troupe, he had so few days off because he's obviously in every scene of the movie. And on one day, when he was allowed a free day, he showed up on the set at the Long Tian Cafe anyway, and everybody was kind of amazed to see him there. And I asked him what the hell he was doing there, and it's one day off, and he said, well, I figure my character would probably be drinking at the bar in this scene. And I said, yeah, but you know, you're giving up your only day. And he said, I want to make the movie real. When the other actors realized that Mel was volunteering his services as an unpaid extra for the day, you can imagine what kind of ripple effect it had on their dedication, not only on the actors, but on the crew as well. It was an amazing gesture. It was enormously appreciated by everyone, and can't say enough about what he brought to this picture. I understand he also directs now. This is another scene that I came up with in conjunction with Bob Rafelson, the original director of the movie. We started talking about the Fellini film La Dolce Vita, which has an opening scene, I think it's the opening scene, of a figure of Jesus being towed through the sky, and we sort of evolved it into this. Robert, incorrigible. If you ever come across it, the soundtrack album to this movie is great. Bonnie Raitt and Dr. John do a version of Rescue Me that's killer. The reason that you're seeing local people within the confines of Long Tian Air Force Base is that it really was a self-contained community of its own. It was a city, essentially a city within a crater, and local people coexisted with CIA and other types.
One Senator Davenport at the VIP lounge at the Vientiane Airport, and you take him up to the refugee camp at Bean Luke. Of course, you zip.
Check out Robert's takes here.
And if he's dying for a bit of local action, you just dazzle him with bullshit.
Well, we got nothing else to dazzle him with, and it is such dazzling bullshit, Rob. See you later.
Dean, listen,
Don't fuck around with the senator, okay?
I don't know what you mean, Major.
Keep things on a need-to-know basis.
Oh, you mean treat him like a mushroom, keep him in the dark, and feed him on shit.
Ken Jenkins, the CIA supervisor, is the dead opposite of what he looks like. He's bluegrass playing, sort of philosophy reading beatnik. Looks so deceiving. Congress kept in the dark? Hard to believe.
Why do I get the feeling of being kept out of the loop?
What do I know? I'm only boy for carrying luggage bags.
Oh, now please, General, no doubt about that. I apologize. If anything, I should be carrying your luggage. That's how much the United States government values your support.
I hear talk that maybe America stop war and leave Southeast Asia. Not take any suitcase with them.
General, if things get too hairy for us...
I've always had a weakness for guys who are quintessentially square, but who want to use hip or hep jargon. So hairy and bug out coming out of Lane Smith's lips amuse me anyhow.
Why don't you tell the senator what you really want, General? Go ahead, don't be bashful.
Holiday Inn, Southern California. Own and operate.
One man's vision of the American dream.
That might be difficult. Well, you find all this amusing, do you?
I sure do. But hell, Senator...
One of the, as a writer, one of the hardest things you can do to an actor is to ask him to laugh while delivering a line, and for obvious reasons, it's a hell of a challenging thing, particularly after you've done it 25 times. Mel's a pro, and I don't know how many people could have delivered that line as well as he did. This scene is set in a USAID camp. Nancy Travis is stepping into frame now, plays a really the only true humanitarian throughout most of the movie.
I'm Corinne Landreau with USAID. May I show you around?
Boss has picked a hell of a spot to put you.
They had to keep moving these refugee camps from place to place as the bombing campaigns shifted their target areas.
What do you figure you got here? 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, best, and then we fold up tents and leave.
Noble work, Miss Landreau. This is truly noble work.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator, I'll meet you back at the plane. I'll see you later, Corinne.
Thanks, Gene.
Look at that little devil operating.
General Sun's come here to Shanghai all these men and boys for his private army.
Well, now, Shanghai's an ugly word.
Oh, well, how would you describe what he's doing?
Oh, well, I'd say he's showing a lot of charisma.
Charisma?
What you've got to remember, Ms. Landreau, is these people have different values than you and I. But the nice part is, we're all pulling together for the same cause.
Same cause. General Sun's only cause is General Sun. Don't you get it, Senator? The CIA flies drugs for him. In return, he loans us his troops, plus he's kicking money back into the
CIA. You
know
what? You've been working.
Here's a little screenwriting tip for what it's worth. Larry Gelbart, as far as I know, is the originator of it. When you have exposition like Nancy Travis just delivered, try to deliver it when someone is angry. It takes the sting off the obviousness, and so Nancy is yelling at the senator, and you don't hopefully notice that you're getting important exposition at the same time.
Now, frankly, gentlemen, I'm concerned. We're not children in Congress. Now, we know General Song
Soon
is up to some kind of hanky-panky with opium and whatnot. Now, nobody's perfect, not even our allies. Seriously, when
We hear rumors of Americans lining their own pockets with dope money. Gentlemen, that endangers this entire war.
To me, the Lane Smith character represents a streak of American decency that that would do good around the world if it was really informed, but which, as we're seeing today, as I speak with the Iraq prisoner scandal, somehow they don't find out everything they need to know.
Trying to protect the good name of our pilots. You mean our pilots are involved in smuggling narcotics? Not all of them, just a few rotten apples. They know we can't inspect every piece of cargo, and so they take advantage of our trust.
A requirement for the job. Come up with a quick cover story and give someone up. Give someone up quick. Oh, here's Bonnie Raitt and B.B. King. My memory is failing. We did drop a tremendous number of live pigs in Laos, and one of the slight problems with that is that they don't eat pork in that part of Southeast Asia. They are now loading various kinds of things onto the planes.
None of your business.
And that's the story, that's the answer you get a lot of times. None of your business.
Enjoy the animals, fellas.
What?
I got a bad feeling this morning.
Don't worry about it. We're not going to run into any golden babies, okay? I'll be your good luck charm.
Right. The golden BB that Art LaFleur keeps referring to and Robert is answering him about here was a term that the pilots used to describe that bullet that has your name on it, that mysterious rendezvous with destiny that you have out there somewhere. The golden BB.
Coming up first, and the three little pigs. There's no designation on this last cargo.
Hey, General Sungai was supervising the unload.
You can never do as well as the real people do in terms of creating dialogue. They live it. So you're generally better off with a notebook copying down phrases than you are making things up. Here's the kicker. The kicker is, as the name implies, the guy who shoves or kicks the actual cargo out of the open bay door at the back of the plane, and pretty often goes out with it. And there's no cord, there's nothing, it's not bungee jumping, it's dying is what I think it's technically called. If you go out with the cargo, nobody brings you back. So it's a job that's usually thrust on local people, indigenous people.
No, you never go back. Never go back.
What? What do you mean you never go back? You just lost your kicker, man.
You never go back.
Don't you get it? You just went out the back.
What a shot that is. I love that shot. Now, in this case, obviously, there is a cord pulling him back, but that's a bit of poetic license. That's, or you can view it as a stunt on Art LaFleur's part, which in fact, in the script, that's what it is.
Hey,
it's a hazing stunt.
That's not funny, okay? That's not funny!
Hey, Billy, how's it going?
It's great.
Now listen, Nino's serving up some lobster tonight.
Very few actors could pull this scene off. Mel's sense of command of innate cool allows him to bring it off.
Make some reservations, have Nino
chill a bottle of Macon Village. 9 o'clock okay for you guys?
Yeah, great.
Roger that.
Peachy.
I liked the pilots that I talked to a lot. They were adrenaline junkies, all right. And once the war ended, a lot of them were completely lost souls. They are not the kind of guys who can be the dignified white-haired pilot that flies you on. American Airlines from New York to L.A., that's not who they are. So a lot of them ended up doing the same general kind of work, but not for the CIA. And a number of them, some of them, wound up in federal institutions that were not war-related, let's put it that way.
Shoots at us.
And needless to say, an enormous percentage of them died in action, and their memories certainly should be honored and remembered. Whether what they did was right or wrong is not within my scope to judge, but they were brave guys.
Coming right at me.
Robert plays hysteria really well, I think, in general.
Okay, check number one. Number one's okay.
He's a guy of so many talents. One night we were drinking in a bar with a bunch of the crew members, and Mel said to everyone who came through the doors of the bar, anyone who can't tap dance is feminine by nature, let's say. And so everyone would walk in and attempt some little shuffle, tap dance, and sit down at the bar. Robert came through the door, and Mel said, anyone who can't tap dance is feminine. And Robert broke into a tap sequence that would have been perfectly in place in a Fred Astaire movie. It was astonishing. He tap danced all over the bar. He jumped up onto the bar and tap danced around all the glasses, came down on the floor in a perfect split. Everyone was just stunned. Here was yet another of Robert Downey Jr.'s incredible talents. And afterwards, I said to him, Robert, I never knew you could dance like that. And he said, oh, you know how it is, man. When we hate ourselves, we learn to do a lot of things well, don't we? That one hit rather close to home. But I don't know anybody who does as many things well as Robert does. He's an incredibly good singer. He's a talented songwriter. He's a fine musician all around. He's a hell of a dancer. And a nice guy.
You too, Neely. Let it go. Put on your parachute, man. Come on.
I'm riding in with you.
No, you're not. You're going to listen to what I say. Put on your parachute. I want you on.
The concept for Gene's character, in two words, was Buddhist cowboy. Mel and I signed off on that, and from that point on, we knew who Gene was. Robert had more trouble latching on to a concept for his character, and finally I said, why don't you think of yourself as Mel's kid brother, and you love him because he's always taken care of you, and you hate him because he's always taken care of you, and from that moment on, Robert felt locked into the role.
I have never, ever, ever had a jump out of an airplane before.
You struggle as a writer or as a director for those tiny hooks that will help an actor ground his performance in something other than words on a page. Coming up now is really the most spectacular plane stunt of the movie, and a plane stunt that that, as I indicated earlier, a lot of stuntmen and coordinators have told me they feel is still unbeaten as a stunt. And again, no computer effects. This is all done physically, you know, using practical effects. I should add also that I've worked on a lot of movies, but Air America was for me, and I think for a lot of us who were involved in it, far and away the most exciting and the most life-changing movie that we ever worked on. It was a massive undertaking on every level, and I'll try to point out specific instances of that as we go along. But off the top of my head, I should point out that it was a huge budgeted movie made in Thailand with people involved in it who spoke English, who spoke Thai, some of whom spoke neither English nor Thai, but mountain dialects from the hills in northern Thailand. There were at all times three separate units filming. It's pretty common in movies to have a second unit filming action sequences while the main unit is doing work with the stars of the movie. But in this case, we had third units. We had three entire production units functioning at all times. It was a gigantic undertaking. We had to have vintage aircraft, since the movie takes place in 1970-1971, and the movie was made in 1987. One of the first questions that presented itself was, how do you get a hold of enormous cargo planes and a vast array of very, very special smaller planes that are used for mountain landings that were used 17 years prior to the making of the film. Some of those planes, for example, had ended up in the service of a South American dictator who rented them out to us at exorbitant rates. They then had to be flown all the way from South America to Southeast Asia, and we had to find pilots who were capable of flying these aircraft, some of which hadn't been used for 15 or 17 years. And that's a tiny problem that we faced in terms of the logistical challenges of making the movie. So that gives you a sense, if you multiply that by about 300, of the kinds of problems that were faced by the creative staff and the craft people of this movie, who were at every level absolutely the best that could be found. They were assembled by Dan Melnick, and that's why I feel I'd like to dedicate my portion of this recording to Dan.
What? There was opium on that?
You said it. Opium.
And he took his opium instead of us?
You helped him load it, pal.
When we get to the strip, you go north and I'll search this side. We'll find them. And if we hurry, we can still make that 9:30 table at Nino's.
Sounds good, Gene. We'll see you there.
Come on. Where is everybody? Quit it, okay? Huh.
Trouble off your right wing down there in the jungle, boys. We got the other team moving in on our buddies.
Crawling with black pajamas.
I have to admit, I'm not totally crazy about them. Music in this sequence. It seems to tell us the story a second time, which is not what you look for in music. In other words, it indicates to us what we already know from watching the picture. Finding a writing tone for this movie was a challenge. We had always conceived of it as a tough, dark comedy, inherently dark comedy, if it was going to be a comedy at all. To present it without the humor, to me and to everyone else involved, would have made it so painful and so cynical as to almost be unwatchable. This is Air America pilots as they really are. Mel's look a moment ago, that little uh-oh, here it comes.
Well done today. We're going in a
approximately 3/4 of a mile southwest of Tango 7.
All right, now coming up is going to be a sequence, one of my favorite sequences in the movie. And before we talk about it, I'll invite you to spot the mistake. There's a mistake in this scene somewhere, and I'll give you a few minutes to see what it was.
I thought you had this helicopter blessed this morning.
I did. I had a feeling the monk wasn't concentrating. Well,
get it yet?
Two ways about it, you know. We got a drop.
No, man.
Yeah, we got a drop with sniper bait.
Well, Mel's pendant, the Buddha around his neck is hanging the wrong way. The shot was actually filmed with the two of them upright, of course, and then turned over in post-production.
What is that?
Tails.
Tails, isn't it?
That's Tails.
I'll go and look, okay?
But in general, this scene is a perfect example of how you can collaborate and get something better than you originally had. Mel and Robert and I spent a couple hours the morning that we were going to shoot this scene trying to talk out the issue of, would you want to go first or would you want the other guy to go first? And as we role played it, I would jot down little pieces of dialogue from everyone. I don't even know who wrote half the things in this scene. Mel wrote some, Robert wrote some, and I wrote some. They're both so bright that they were a joy to work with on that level.
We should get moving.
Okay.
Can you walk?
Walk?
Yeah.
What do you mean walk? I'm in the goddamn jungle.
Mel had horrific back problems during the making of the movie, so this was not a difficult stretch for him. The back pain, we had to stop shooting several times and have him treated by chiropractors and massage people.
Gene, Billy, give me voice.
Every step he's taking here is costing him dearly in terms of physical pain. Anyone who thinks that actors are sissies ought to go on one location shoot like this. They'd quickly be disabused of that notion. 15, 16 hours of doing those falls is not for sissies. Or maybe it is, but in this case it isn't. So again, I don't want to get very deep into the politics of it now. That you'll be able to hear about that in other sections of this DVD package. But since the Wall Street Journal ran a full page editorial condemning the movie, an editorial, by the way, that was co-written by the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, Peter Kahn, and since the charge he leveled at me was spitting on the graves of American war dead, I don't see how this movie can be interpreted as dishonoring these pilots. As always, they're brave men following orders that may be bad. I'd like to see the blame placed on the people who give the orders rather than the ones who are forced to carry them out at great danger to themselves.
Let's change our course. With some luck, we'll be out of here by the morning.
How many more miles?
Now, these guys... the chubby fellow is the... star of Thailand's equivalent of Saturday Night Live. The skinny one is an actual cabaret performer. I originally had them singing Richard Rogers' show tune. We couldn't get permission for that. So at the very last moment, we had to come up with another tune, and I was racking my brain. Horse with No Name seemed appropriate, and we got clearance over the phone, and that's how that scene got made. My favorite scene.
Davenport runs the Senate prayer group. With a guy like that, you don't bring up the subject of blowjobs. You wait for him to bring it up.
Tactics. Always important. Know your target group.
Jesus. Again.
That's the wrong quote. No, violation. All go home now. All finished. Everybody come now. Free dinner. Nobody. Hey. Hey. I do business all my life. For sure, no Corsican fuck me. I picked up stuff from Crash Play.
Bird Kwok and I butted heads a couple of times. It's worth talking about. People on these commentaries usually talk about problems or discord, but I think it's important. Bert was very conflicted about the dialogue he was given. He did not want to be stereotyped as a comical Asian figure, and I certainly respected his feelings about that. I thought he was dignified to raise the subject, but the producer and the director kept pointing out that this character was not a native speaker of English, and that actually he was speaking English quite well. Both sides had a point. We tried to negotiate a middle way, and I think ultimately Bert was okay with it, but it's an example of the kind of problem you can create for yourself when you're sitting in front of a typewriter or a word presser, not fully envisioning actual human beings in these roles yet, not knowing if it'll ever happen for real. And I respected Bert for taking that stand, and I hope that he is happy with how it finally came out. I think he's hilarious in it. And scary, too.
How's the conversation coming?
Well, I'm surprised they haven't knocked us off yet.
Surprised, huh?
Yeah.
How come you're so relaxed, man? Maybe you don't get this, but when you die, that's it, all right? It's over. End of story. Blackness.
Yeah. They stick you in a box, cover you up with dirt, and don't even let you out of it for weekends. It's really depressing.
Right. Nothing.
Buddha says
that. Stop with the Buddha thing, all right? I just don't believe that a true Buddhist would be in the gun-running business, okay? You're a hustler, man. All right, you covered up a little jasmine incense, you call it Eastern religion, but you're a hustler.
I didn't say I was a good Buddhist.
I'm English. Look, hey. Mangong.
They're going to do it. No need to speed things up.
Look, those guns are all wrong for rainy conditions.
What you need is some good all-weather weapons.
Again, this is based on research. The French traded weaponry a lot with the locals when they were the imperial power in this part of the world, and the locals soon found out that, in fact, they had been taken because The rifles wouldn't work in wet weather.
Oh, can you believe it? This guy swapped a cow.
As I progress as a screenwriter, I become more and more of a kind of method writer. I just want to know everything there is in terms of hard nonfiction information and glean little bits from it. There'll always be something I can use, again, better than what I'd make up.
What do you say? Gentlemen, these guns are cherry.
Robert.
All right.
The woman playing Mel's wife in this movie is one of the biggest, is the biggest female movie star in Thailand.
Oh, I couldn't tell.
I wish we'd had more time to dwell on this part of Mel's character, but we had to make savage cuts in the movie. The first cut was 3 hours and 18 minutes, and so we had to get an hour and 20 minutes out.
You don't look like the kind of guy who'd live in a place like this.
Hmm? No. Oh. Never look at looks. Looks will fool you every time.
What the fuck are you doing here, man?
This was a speech that Mel said made him decide to make the movie.
See, I had this theory once. I believed in the politics of Saturday night.
Yeah.
I rated all governments and countries by how good or bad their Saturday nights were, and I knew that Moscow and Peking had to be a stone drag at that time of the week. So I was flying for a cause. I was fighting to defend chicken barbecues and weenie roasts and Ray Charles songs and drinking Southern Comfort till you pass out behind the bar.
Politics of Saturday.
Also one of the few speeches that he delivers verbatim, I might add.
It's not particularly true, that's all. I hear they party pretty hard in Moscow.
No need to give up a good theory just because it isn't true.
Why don't you go home? Hmm? Look at me. Look at Neely. The rest of us, we're all a bunch of trouble junkies. We've been mainlining danger and adrenaline for so long, nothing else gets us off. It's kind of sick. Quit before you pick up the habit, and you will. You'll pick up the habit. You don't like it.
Good stuff, Mel.
Go back to L.A.
Mel's so believable here.
Again. What do you think?
It's not the dialogue, it's Mel.
I'm just going to take care of a couple of things first.
You want to get even? You want to get even? With who? Rob? General Sung? Hey, forget it, will you? This is the Orient. Now, what Sung did to you was nothing. I've seen things here that I could never possibly have imagined. And I'm a guy with a pretty broad imagination.
Well, it's a little bit the dialogue, too, I guess.
So.
But you just believe Mel when he says he's seen things he could never have imagined, and it's all in his eyes.
Three tailor shops, silk factory, but you haven't told me one new thing about the dope trade. Now I'm leaving soon, and I'm not going back empty-handed.
As you watch these scenes, it might be interesting to try to imagine for yourselves the sheer amount of physical work it has to be done on a movie like this. It's impossible to describe the set building, the lighting, the research, the stunt creating, and it's going on 20, 22 hours a day. People don't sleep. Everyone from the stunt coordinator to the grips to the lighting guys, they stop normal life and live within the movie for as many months as it takes.
That is the whole point of airdropping them, Pirelli.
My respect for all of them is unbounded. It's just amazing to me.
Americans use this jumbo size, and their men will start to fear us.
Okay. You're excused.
We had an English crew on this movie, and their ability to stay out all night drinking phenomenal amounts of alcohol and then show up for work on no sleep and work a 17-hour day astonished me.
In the interest of base security, I have to remind you to be absolutely quiet about this.
Rob, before you tell us to keep quiet again, could we please have a moment of silence?
Visit Colorful Native Village. That's what my schedule reads, Gene.
But we've been here nearly 6 hours. I think we could safely say I visited it.
I'm sorry, Senator. They're nearly finished.
Well, what is that thing, Gene? A boat?
Sort of.
Gene, you strange man.
Thank you for noticing, General.
You love old ways, Asian ways. But General Song love tomorrow ways. Modern world.
Yes. I think our friend here is a little tipsy.
It's high on America, too. I've seen it before. It's a stronger high than whiskey. It's a bigger high than opium. Our friend is stoned on dreams of the USA.
Gene.
Why, it was true back then that wherever you went, even in Southeast Asia, even in the places that had been devastated by the war, they were in love with all things America, and I wonder if it's still true now.
Let's take this back to the plane, gentlemen. You taking that kayak with you?
It's not a kayak, Senator. This is Jack Neely's coffin. I promised him I'd make sure they didn't send him home back to Texas in a body bag. And no, he wasn't flying dope. General, wake up!
Of course, nowadays, I guess Jack Neely, however he was flown back to America, he wouldn't be allowed to photograph his body bag, his boat, his coffin, or whatever he came home in. That's what actually a number of Air America pilots actually wound up doing, becoming gentleman farmers or some other similar role in Thailand. They didn't come back.
I heard that.
Gentlemen, I just spent the day with the senator and the spooks.
We all grew to really like a lot of the prostitutes. We were working with them night after night. There was nothing unprofessional going on, I might add.
Where you been?
Just around.
Yeah.
Oh, we did some shopping on the black market. Got some grenades. Now I'm gonna go have some fun.
Fun?
Yeah, I'm gonna have some big fun. Serious fun. Lots of noise.
Hey, this doesn't sound like well-planned fun.
Like I said, down on the ground's where I tend to fuck up.
I wouldn't do this if I was you.
Yeah, I know. Then you wouldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. See you later. It's Pepsi time.
soda?
Sure, fancy cup.
This sequence was devised in conjunction with Vic Armstrong, who was the stunt coordinator on the movie, who's done all the Bond movies. He's phenomenal, state-of-the-art. I found as a writer, in any of my functions in the movie business, the more I listen and the less I talk, the better off I am. For example, all these stunt coordinators have stunts that they've been dreaming of for 15, 20 years that nobody's ever asked them about. Ask them what they would do to blow up a dope factory, and they may have a phenomenal idea that they've just been nursing. But when they're always being given instructions, they don't get a chance to create. This was bad. This was dangerous. Robert really, really, it was wired for too much explosives, and I was in the alley right behind Robert in that shot, and we all got pelted with bits of debris a little bit more, and there would have been serious injuries. In my heroin lab, if you'll remember, this was the lab in which I was doing something to white powder.
Could I have the use of 2 kilos?
There's a rule, a screenwriting rule in this kind of movie, that your story is only as good as your villain. And it's a good one to remember. The Ken Jenkins character here is a guy who's always thinking and always improvising and quick to react, and hopefully that translates as being a good heavy.
What are you taking today?
Taking flour sacks over to Bientong and the porter.
Right.
As the French director Jean Renoir said, everyone has his reasons, too. I always try to remember that nobody wakes up in the morning saying, I'm going to be a bad guy today. Everyone has his reasons. That guy probably believes that he's doing the right thing in fighting communism, and
so much better. Yeah, there was a cloud of opium smoke.
Who can blame him?
I got everybody stoned. And they actually shut that plant down for 3 whole hours. It didn't start again till early this morning. That's the way it is.
One Elam Yai.
Yeah.
You want some clan, Pop?
Okay.
Mel spent many hours studying Thai, even though he only had a few lines in it. At the time that we were shooting the picture, he was preparing for his version of Hamlet, which he did immediately after this. And I'd sit with him for hours, and we'd go over his Thai dialogue and then read Shakespeare together, and I'd play all the other characters. He'd play Hamlet. During the course of it, he showed me how to fake a punch, and he did a great job of it, except he missed on one and almost broke my nose. I had the feeling that there might have been a little intention behind it. Maybe he didn't like his lines that day.
Yeah,
Pull the truck out. Quick.
Keep moving, Audrey. Come on.
Come on. Get to it. Hurry up.
Hey.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, calm down. You'll get your opium field. Now we're going to need a few more hours to move them out of here.
Get them out.
Stagger Lee to base. Over.
Slight change in your flight plan, Stagger Lee. Hold off on the drop. We want you to take her down to LS-18 for a routine inspection.
Routine inspection?
That's affirmative, Stagger Lee. We don't make them up, we just read them.
Check. Heading towards LS-18.
Hey, Baba, I'm going over to LS-18 for routine inspection.
Routine inspection?
Yep. Never heard of it.
Then it ain't routine. Baba, check the cargo.
What's up?
I don't know. Something's up. Check the cargo, will you?
I like the way that Robert, very gradually over the course of the movie, seems to become more and more seasoned and more an Air America pilot. He's certainly not the kid who showed up at the beginning.
I hope to God our information is wrong, Senator. It would break my heart if we found heroin on that plane.
On the other hand, sir, the pilot...
Again, it's an isolated instance. It's one or two rotten apples. It's six guards and a prison in Iraq. It's never the orders from on high. It's always a few rotten apples that spoil the bunch. That line of bullshit will never end.
Senator, this one might resist with force if our information is correct. Cool and ruthless customer.
Hey, Billy, I got nothing back here. Listen, man, we're being set up, okay? Keep looking.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Cut him open. What do you got?
Nothing.
Come on, hurry up.
Got it.
Car. God, I knew it. I knew it. Look at those bastards down there just waiting for us.
Damn, it's like they want us busted.
Dead and busted.
Oh, no.
Somebody messed with that fuel gauge because we're running out. Forget this. I'm going to go for that abandoned airstrip over by Tango 7.
Wait a minute, Billy. They're waiting for us down here. They can follow us to Tango 7.
Well, we'll figure something out.
No, don't say we, man, because I'm 42 years old and I never figured out anything in my whole fucking life.
Gotta confess a little weakness for that line, too. Autobiographical at that point. That's an ad-lib by Tim Thomas.
Looks like we're gonna make it. What the hell are we gonna do once we get on the ground, huh?
I'm working on it.
It's been pointed out that there are a lot of crashes in this movie, and it's true, but they did crash a lot. At one point, when we were looking around for a last line for the movie, Dan Melnick called his friend Neil Simon, and Neil Simon proposed a line. Stick around, Billy. There's a couple of ways to crash I haven't showed you yet. This sequence, I think, yeah, I'm certain, this sequence was conceived of by Richard Rush, the original writer-director I mentioned before. And I thought it was a great one, flying the smaller plane into the hulk of the larger one. I'm sorry.
You really are
that is an. If memory serves, that's a quote from Oliver North. The president loves my ass. And I'm sure he didn't mean it in any sexual way, but wonderful line nonetheless.
Right by that refugee camp, too. Yeah, that's where the poppies are.
Gene, of course, is closer.
Mayday, mayday, we're out to all aircraft. Heavy mortar fire at Scout Camp 1. Do you read? All aircraft.
Saunders and Pirelli are nearly as close as we are. They can get her.
Yeah, we're only about...
I had originally written a lot of dialogue for Robert. And then we took it all out. The look said so much more. It's much more annoying to Mel that Robert agrees with him than debate him. Good music call here, I would say. Give me shelter.
Is anybody going to go in? Please, come in.
Sorry, Pearly. I was in a phone booth. Tangent closed. We'll get her.
This is a little confusing, I think, in the final edit. So let me just try to make it clear that Sung is battling a rival warlord for possession of this very lucrative poppy crop. Could that be a real word? Poppy crop. Yes, indeed, it is a real word. And... of course, Nancy Travis and her refugees are caught in a crossfire. I think you can get a PG-13 as we did with this many uses of fucking. In fact, at that point in time, we were given very exact word counts from the Motion Picture Association saying how many fucks, how many shits, and how many dams and hells we could have to have a certain rating. It was pretty funny. I had to go over the whole script and count the fucks.
You're just another version of Major Lamont with a slightly hipper rap. Knock it off, will ya? Hey, Mother Teresa! I was gonna do it anyway. I just hate being lectured. Slightly hipper rap. Slightly.
There's Gene's whole future lying in front of him, his pension plan, and he's just gonna blow it all up. A lot of people in the movie business have done that in one way or another.
Figuring out how to tell his family that he misplaced their nest egg. Meanwhile, our flight plan today takes us over the Plain of Jars, Anaheim, Azusa, and the Mekong Delta, leading us down into... Where are we going? What are we going to do?
Well, you're going to help me get the cash back I lost when you made me dump off my cargo.
Made you dump your cargo?
Yes.
I didn't make you dump your cargo. I merely suggested do not blame me for the single decent act of your adult life, okay? I mean, besides, we're going to get that kind of money out of your mind.
Down here at Crazy Gene's used airplanes, people think we're out of our minds since we slashed the prices on our used C-123s. You got a private army, you want to get into a battle
zone. Forget it.
Or you want to rent some guns. You find your hassle by those pesky border guards. Well,
Gene, you can't sell the plane. It's U.S. government property.
The U.S. government doesn't exist in Laos, and neither does this plane.
Good point.
Just sit back, relax, and we'll do what we do best. We fly.
That's what we do. We fly, and
fly with me, let's fly.
The choice of this tune was Dan Melnick's, the producer's, to whom I'd like to dedicate my little part of this commentary. And hope you enjoyed it. The last thing I would say is that on the first night of production, the night before production, as we were about to start shooting, I had dinner with the producer and some of the actors, and Dan Melnick said, "Look around, boys, take a look at this show, because you're never going to experience anything like it. This is something that I've never seen in 40 years in the business. It's on a scope that I've never made a movie, and it's saying something very radical. You'll never experience it again. Soak it all in." I did. I know all the actors did. And it made for a really life-changing experience. Hope you enjoyed it.
And don't tell your mama.